This is Jane McGonigal, the author of Super Better and a big fan of the Psych Tech Podcast. You're listening to Psych Tech Podcast, where you will get the future of psychology and technology.
Welcome to Psych Tech, the Psychology and Technology Podcast, where we explore the human side of technology. And your two hosts today are me, Josue Cardona, and
Kelly Dunlap.
Hey, Kelly.
Hey, Josue. I heard you got a party in your stomach, but they weren't invited.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, today I'm going to tell you a story.
Oh, good. Okay? I love stories.
Okay, let's start with a little story. Started about a month ago, and I started feeling just weird in my stomach, like weird pains on my sides. I don't know. I thought at first that it was a kidney stone because I've had a kidney stone in the past. It felt very familiar. It is not pleasant at all. And so I actually missed a few days' work because it felt like I was passing a kidney stone. There's really no way to tell unless you get an ultrasound and see. But kind of because I had one before, just did that. So I didn't go to the doctor or anything. Like 2 weeks later, I wake up and I have really, really bad pain in my like mid back area near the kidneys. It was really uncomfortable, so I decided to go to the doctor. And I go, and of course they're just asking questions. They don't know, what it could be. So they go and they have me get some tests and they tell me to go get an ultrasound, get the ultrasound done. That was a Thursday. So Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, I have no idea whatsoever, what happened. I didn't get any call back. And that's, that's like normal stuff. So during this time, I'm kind of a little nervous because when I went to get the ultrasound done, the rad tech, he's doing the ultrasound and I ask him, oh, like, everything look okay? And his response was, well, you'll have to talk to the doctor, but let's just say it's very good that you came in today.
Oh, what a jerk.
So I'm freaking out now. Friday, that's Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So what do? I do what anybody would do, I think. You go to Google, right? And I'm Googling symptoms left and right. And so and now I'm more scared, right? The more I read about stuff, I'm like, oh, I have that. Like, what could it be? Could it be this? Could it be that thing? So Monday afternoon, I get a call. Doctor says, hey, we got all your test results back. Everything looks great. Okay, bye. And that was it.
Oh.
Like, everything was negative. There was no problem whatsoever. Everything was fine.
Did you find that rad tech and slap him upside the head?
I want to. Oh, I want to very badly. And then, like, your mind starts going places. You're like, well, maybe the doctor's stupid and the rad tech knows better. Like, I don't know, right? You're thinking, I don't know. You start thinking all sorts of stuff. But, the internet, I'm on the fence on whether or not it was helpful or not. But I found a few different articles very recently that kind of show that search engine diagnoses is getting a lot better. And so before I go into those, like, I'm sure you have some sort of story like that, or anything to add.
Well, I mean, being pregnant, I have probably Googled more about health and bodily functions than I ever had before. Basically, like, is blank, insert problem here, normal in blank trimester of pregnancy. So for example, this restless leg thing that I've had the last couple of weeks, apparently it's totally normal. And everybody's like, yeah, no, that's just a thing. And no, you can't take anything for it. So even if it is bad, that's just suck it up. I'm like, oh, I mean, that I guess for good and for better and for worse, that's what most pregnancy symptoms tell you is, well, nope, that's normal. Just suck it up and deal with it. Which is better than, oh my gosh, you have cancer, you're going to die.
Yeah.
Which I feel like anytime you WebMD something and you put in four or five very generic symptoms, it's like lupus. It's like something from House. There's always some kind of horrible, awful thing that could happen. But similarly, I had an experience at the vet with Ellie, who's my beagle, and I love her very much. And we went for one of her checkups, and the doctor was like, oh, well, she's got a really loud heart murmur, and she's probably got heart disease, and you need to take her to the cardiologist immediately. So cue absolute horror and panic and just tears and just hysterical. Take her to the cardiologist. Cardiologist says, oh, well, she's an 8-year-old dog who's had heartworm. And I said, yes, she's had heartworm, but she's been treated. He's like, oh, there's a very noticeable heart murmur, but for a dog her age and what she's been through, she's fine. So, like, just, yes, that from 0 to 100 back to 0, it's exhausting. And so I can only imagine, I mean, for me, it was not even 24 hours between when I heard, when the vet told me that to, you know, when we went to the cardiologist, but for you all weekend, that seems torturous.
Yeah. Yeah. And actually one time when I was 21 years old and I got what I still don't know exactly what it was. I think it was an insect bite and it got really weird. And I went to a dermatologist and they did a biopsy and I got a call back saying, hey, we just wanted to let you know the results came back. It looks like lymphoma.
What?
You should go talk to an oncologist.
Oh my gosh. Okay? Doctors are the worst.
No, they're the worst. Okay.
They're so the
and
worst.
This story is way worse because it took 3 months from that day until I finally got an all clear.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
No, that seriously is just as not a physician. I'll just say yeah. Physicians are the worst. I'm going to go with that. I'm not going to label with doctor or nurse or whatever. You, medical professionals, you need to take classes in people skills, okay? That's all I'm going to say. Because again, as somebody who's been to the doctor more times in the last 9 months than I have in my entire life combined, people skills are important. Please, please go do that.
Oh, but, when I went to the cancer hospital, everybody I met, the first thing they would say is, oh, are you here for you? You're too young to be here.
Like, oh, what? Gee, thanks. Thanks. It's great.
Thanks. Yeah, I agree with you. Thank you for those kind, reassuring, positive words.
Yeah. So, but what we're talking about this week is maybe removing the terrible bedside manner altogether, because we're kind of almost removing the human.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, I think it's not uncommon for people to look at WebMD and put symptoms in. I mean, WebMD has an app called the Symptom Checker, right? It is designed for that purpose. And, you know, just one of the things that Google did recently is that if you just start typing in symptoms, it'll come up with these cards at the beginning with possible, what could be causing it, what could be a disease that you have or something that you might be dealing with, and possible treatments. Like it's giving all these medical-focused cards and information right up front. It's even a different color. And, you know, they're making an effort to help with that and provide useful information, which I think is great. And that in and of itself is not so crazy, I don't think. I don't think it's that even exciting, right? Because instead of getting WebMD as the first result, now you get, or Mayo Clinic, right, is one that always pops up to the top. Now you get these Google focus results. But that coupled with this other news about Microsoft did a study where they were looking at Bing searches for symptoms related to pancreatic cancer. And what they did was that they had the search history of people who had received diagnoses of pancreatic cancer. And they were able to find that people were searching for symptoms 5 months before they even got a diagnosis.
Wow.
Now, this is a big deal because pancreatic cancer is a bad one. You know, it's one of the worst.
Unlike those good cancers.
Yeah, well, you know, like, I mean, unfortunately, we're living in a world, or fortunately, where a lot of cancers, you know, they're treatable, you know, you'd be okay. Like when they told me lymphoma, I was like, damn it. Why lymphoma? Like that one's not good.
That's cancer of the bone, right?
The blood.
The blood. Okay. Obviously, I'm not.
Oh, no. I'm sorry. Leukemia is the blood and lymphoma is of your lymph, Like your
lymph nodes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So it's also in the But lymph is like a liquid in your body, I think. Again, we are not medical experts, and I forgot about
obviously.
This. I was an expert on this topic 10 years ago, trust me.
If there are any doctors, physicians, or nurses out there, I'm sure they're just facepalming if they've gotten this far.
Please yell at us. At
Except about the bedside manner, because that is important. Just, you know, work on it.
Getting back to the pancreatic cancer and that research, I mean, that's a huge deal. 5 months prior to – like if they would have known 5 months prior that they had pancreatic cancer, that can be the difference between life and death. And it could add months of life. I mean, pancreatic cancer is really, really bad. And so like nobody knows your body better than you. And to think that possibly there is this record out there of the symptoms and when you started feeling them is – now this is the part that really got me thinking and kind of got me excited, because if you combine that then with the news of what Google is trying to do – now you're looking at something that could really be beneficial. And I immediately found myself deliberately searching for symptoms on Google in hopes that it can provide me some sort of informed decision, even if not now, but maybe in the future when this technology keeps evolving, we can look back and say, oh man, like he's been searching for, I don't know, numb pain left side for like, you know, 4 years. And that could really be helpful, because I don't write that stuff down.
Right.
Most people don't. It's really hard, you know? And actually, I wanted to say this at the beginning, but we live in the United States and we don't have universal healthcare. And going to the doctor is often one of those things where like it's stupid, but you think about how much it'll cost at times before you even go to the doctor. So usually, you know, so a lot of people in the United States don't go until it's really, really late. Mm-hmm. And, you know, 1 month later, I was having these horrible pains yesterday. I was throwing up and I thought about going to the emergency room. And I hate the thought of going to the emergency room, one, because it's not a pleasant experience usually. Especially not around here, I don't think. but it's also an expensive, a very expensive thing to do, even if you do have health insurance. So mm-hmm. So I felt really bad, but I didn't go because, you know, for those reasons. So I woke up today and I did go to a doctor today. And again, I'm thinking about Dr. Google and WebMD and all of these things, because the doctor was an older gentleman, and he had his own theories about what might be going on. And he also told me things that multiple doctors have told me the opposite of in the past. And the first thing I thought was, well, he's older and maybe he's like not up to date on his research, or, you know, I don't know. You know, and he was very old school. Like he did everything on paper. He did everything himself, no nurse. And actually the whole last maybe 15, 20 minutes were him. He did have a secretary, and his secretary and me on the phone with the insurance company trying to figure out how much I was supposed to pay.
Oh my gosh.
Over there. But that's kind of separate. But it was an uncomfortable experience, because now what started today is that I'm just going to – I had to go to a new doctor because I went to urgent care before. So now I have a – now it's really like today I started my treatment. So he took a guess, and we're going to see if this treatment works. So in a month, he'll be able to say, okay, that was it. We figured it out on the first try. Or no, we didn't. So let's go ahead and keep trying something else. And it kind of bothered me, because I've had some of these symptoms for a month. But he says that I probably just had like a stomach virus yesterday, kind of disregarding the entire month and a half of symptoms that I presented.
Right.
So that was really frustrating.
Yeah, it's so invalidating too.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not a doctor, again, but but here we are. Here we are.
But I think you're touching on a really common experience that people have, is they know their bodies, they know something's wrong, but the language between the physician and the patient is usually a pretty large divide. And then there's this this gulf of authority. There's a reason they say doctors make the worst patients, and I have definitely given the midwives probably more heartache and stress than is necessary because although I'm not a physician, I know things such as, you know, it is my right to refuse something. You know, they wanted me to do, I don't know, some kind of genetics blood draw at like 8 weeks. I said, no, I'm not going to do that. For the past 5 weeks, they've been trying to get me to do this gestational diabetes test. And I just keep putting it off. I checked, will this result in a denial of service? They said, no. I'm like, well, you know, then I'm going to take my time and maybe get around to it. Maybe not. But I don't think that's the case for a lot of people. When a doctor tells you something, there's this trust that they know what they're talking about and that you know, even if what they're saying seems counter to your experience, like, oh, Josue, it was a stomach bug that you've just had for an exorbitantly long time, as opposed to really listening to you and what you know is normal for you. And, you know, especially if you're having to bounce around from doctors, you know, it's the worst. Because at least if you have one that you know, then they at least know a little bit of your baseline. So, I mean, it's a difficult situation. Obviously, you know, the therapy room's a little bit different, but if someone's constantly bouncing from therapist to therapist, it's really hard to treat them because you don't establish any kind of baseline or norm. And I'm assuming it's something similar in medicine. But at the same time, there's this trust that we put in the physicians. And I don't think you mentioned him saying things that were counter to what you've heard before. I've had that similar experience. You know, with several of the tests I've had to do at my current OB, and there's nothing that makes me not want to deal with a doctor more than having one doctor tell me one thing and then another doctor tell me the exact opposite. Because then it's like, screw you guys, you obviously have no idea what you're doing. I'm gonna go to Dr. Google and trust crowdsourcing of information because it can't be any more messed up or convoluted than what I'm getting from you right now.
And one of the other studies that I found is that there was this AI recently that won a competition, the competition was to read pathology images related to breast cancer. So it was trying to identify breast cancer in these photos, and the AI was able to do it 92% accuracy. So that's pretty good. But apparently, pathologists have an average of 96% accuracy.
Well, to be fair, the cancer-sniffing dogs had a 98% accuracy. So just throwing it out there.
Yes. Yes, that's a good point. I wonder, there's AI and smells. We're not there yet. Definitely not there yet.
No. Smell-o-vision is not a thing.
Smelling technology is not where it needs to be, obviously.
I don't know. I think it might be exactly where it needs to be. I don't know if I need smell added into my augmented reality.
I do. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I can't wait till Oculus comes out with the Oculus Sniff.
I hope that's what they call it. The Oculus Sniff.
And the third interesting thing about that contest at the AI one is that when you combine the results of the AI with the pathologist, you go up to 99.5% accuracy.
Oh, well, that's good.
And yeah, so you know, why, you know, where are we right now? You know, do you think that my doctor, I personally don't think that this doctor would be okay with me coming with a whole bunch of my Google results and then combining those with what he thinks and then coming up with a diagnosis. I don't think that doctor is there, but I wonder how many places are at a point where they're willing to accept, especially in like private practice, how many of them would be willing to accept something like this or input from an artificial intelligence that could potentially provide some focus? You know, it's like having a human version of House there. You know, you can he could be there spouting all this crazy stuff, and you can take it or leave it. At least take it into consideration. And I don't know. I think that probably this is happening indirectly. Because people are Googling at home and then coming to the doctor. Mm-hmm. But you made an excellent point before about that trust thing. Uh, I I've worked with insurance. I have been the clinician on the mental health side. So maybe that's why we're like this, right? Where the doctor, when he, instead of me being relieved when he said, oh, it sounds like you just had a stomach bug yesterday. I'm like, oh, good, because I was worried. You know, instead I'm like, no, I don't think you know what you're talking about. But that's kind of me, you know? I mean, if he were to maybe take into consideration something else. I mean, I know it's happening a lot in hospitals because they see the benefit of it, especially, like I said, I don't think this doctor has read anything. This is my thought, right? That he was not reading kidney stone research in the past 20 years or something, right? Mm-hmm. But, and that's why AI in hospitals is so useful, because it's actually always keeping tabs on the newest research and kind of adding that to its processing. And where do you think we're at?
Well, it's tough, because I remember when I was working in the clinic, people would come in with WebMD printouts of psychological issues. You know, oh, I think I have this very rare, you know, psychological disorder. And I know it was really important for me not necessarily to obviously take them at their research, because again, I think most people, something happens and they try to research it to the best of their ability, which I think is very admirable. But then there's a reason that you're going to a professional. So there's this balance there. And I know what I would try to do is walk through the symptoms that they identified with and do a little bit more clinical digging about, you know, I mean, something as simple as hearing voices. Well, is it inside or outside? And do they sound like you? Do they sound like somebody else? And some asking questions that the person probably doesn't know to ask, and maybe the internet couldn't even answer. So I know as a clinician, it was like, okay, here's somebody. I always tried to frame it as, here's somebody who's really invested in their treatment. Not somebody who's trying to replace me, not somebody who thinks they know more than I do, but somebody who really wants to be better and is doing everything within their power to try and get better. So from the physician standpoint, I definitely had a couple times where I'm like, well, if you already know everything, why are you here? Like, why do you need me if you've already done all this stuff? So I can definitely feel that. But at the same time, I think it can be really useful in understanding what is normal for them and what is abnormal for someone else. Someone sleeping 5 hours a night to me seems really abnormal, but for them, that might be just the way they are. And so kind of getting a baseline understanding from their research, I think, is really helpful. And I do think it speaks to the motivation of the person to get better, which I'm sure maybe it's more prominent in physical ailments than psychological ailments. But, you know, getting your client engaged can be pretty challenging. So if there's a good tip off, then that's great. There was also I think it was This American Life episode about a platform for crowdsourcing medical mysteries. So it's kind of like a bunch of medical professionals who almost engage in PI work, and they do make money off of people coming in, posting these complaints. And there was a woman, I think it took her 5 years of going to doctors, and she finally went onto this website to crowdsource her symptoms. And they came up with this portfolio of two or three different diagnoses that were kind of rare, and she was able to bring that to a physician who was willing to work with her. And lo and behold, she had some super duper obscure rare disease, and they were able to treat it and all had a happy ending, which was wonderful. So I think it's tough. I think we're at a place where it's becoming more common, but I think it's still going to vary by the physician and how much stock they want to take from their patient, their philosophy on patient interaction, I guess.
Yeah, one of the saddest things about all of this is that in mental health, we rely a lot on self-report and observable behaviors.
Right.
Because there's a lot of things that we can't – there's a lot of things that we can measure and we just don't, right? And in medicine, there's even more that they can measure and they absolutely don't. Like the problem there is way, way worse. In mental health, there are still things that are only observable, right? And it's really hard to measure. But in medicine, sometimes it's just a matter of – if every time we went to the doctor, they did every single test possible, we would get our diagnosis a lot quicker. And we wouldn't, you know, that woman wouldn't have to wait 5 years. It's just that doctors don't, we don't have a way to test for everything at once, so you're always just chipping away at the problem. And so this kind of search engine idea, or the WebMD, or even an AI that is looking at different information, it relies again very heavily on self-report and just kind of observable behavior.
It goes back to kind of the conversation we had about big data. You know, there's all this information that's out there, you know, terabytes and tetra terabytes and all the other bytes that exist in the world, of all this data that's out there. But how do you parse it and how do you make sense of it? And you really do need research, you know, specifically looking at, say, pancreatic cancer and their search engines and what they look for. And the example that keeps popping into my head is kind of the now folklorish tale of how Target revealed that this guy's daughter was pregnant because of her search engine history. Yep. You know, that it figured out the pattern before anybody else did. And I think it's a very similar problem with what you're talking about in terms of testing, is there's so many medical illnesses that have so many similar symptoms that how can you possibly, you know, even if you're looking for patterns, unless it's something very specific like pancreatic cancer, it has very specific presentation, I would imagine it'd be really difficult to set the pattern to look for. So yeah. I think we're still in the stage of having something happen and then looking retroactively. You know, so someone comes down with pancreatic cancer, and then we go back and look at their search history as opposed to being more prognosticative. I don't think we're quite there yet. Getting better, but definitely not there yet.
Yeah. And again, unfortunately, it's also very expensive.
Oh, yeah.
And that's kind of the saddest part of it for me. But one thing that I have been thinking about today, after having gone to the doctor again, after everything that I was, all these fears that I had, his theory today, the doctor that I saw today, is that most likely I just have a lot of acidity, like acid reflux, like just really, really bad acidity.
Oh.
And so that's like, okay, maybe. So now I'm looking up all sorts of stuff, and it's very possible, right? So after everything that I said, the guy may actually know what he's talking about, right?
Imagine that.
But here's what I've been thinking. Maybe one day Dr. Google will be so like so advanced and so good at his job that he will combine not only the pain in different areas of my abdomen and different other symptoms that I may have put in, but also maybe something like the fact that I've been job searching for the past couple weeks a lot, right? And I was thinking about that in terms of like, well, why would somebody be searching for a job frequently? It's probably because they hate the job that they're at, or they're stressed out at the job.
Or they don't have a job.
Or they don't have a job. And all those things can lead to high levels of stress. And there are some studies that indicate that high levels of stress may cause high levels of acid in the body.
Ulcers for everyone.
Yeah. So when I got home, I'm like, well, if it's just that, and then I'm really just more stressed out than usual, and then is that it? Like, is that actually what's happening? And of course, the irony is that as a mental health professional, I've considered that on and off again, but because of the pain is so bad, I didn't know that, you know, acid reflux could get to that point, you know, that like that level of acidity could lead to all these other problems. That's where I don't have the medical expertise. And that's why I was like, well, you know, it can't just be stress. So imagine that, like if you're, let's say, I don't know, you know, there is somebody sick in your family and it's not you, and now your stress levels are high, or there was a natural disaster in the area, and then you start adding that to the symptoms that are coming in, and now you can paint a way bigger picture and really look at things from, you know, from all these different angles. And it's something that, you know, I've been to doctors who have asked me, like, you know, how are you doing? Like, are you more stressed out lately? This doctor was like in a hurry, and like I was not happy. but you know, but there are doctors that take that into consideration, and kind of, I think that that'll be a really, like, that's a next level thing when, if and when Google starts considering that and putting that into the public search results and kind of giving suggestions based on that. So imagine that not only, and actually when I put the, like the gastroesophageal something, like GRD and IBS and all those kind of things that could be, they didn't give me an official diagnosis, but, you know, any of those things, you, it does actually show stress as a possible cause.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think we're getting somewhere, you know, when we start combining, again, like big data, meaningful data is what really matters. And I don't know, I've been thinking about that since I got from the doctor earlier, about how that box will look differently when not only does it say consult your doctor, but also possibly consult your mental health counselor or a psychologist.
Yeah, because I'm sitting here thinking, you know, the concept that the mind and the body are connected and that if you want to diagnose one, you really need to know about the other, that's kind of a no-brainer in the psychology world. You know, when we do intakes and things like that,
yeah.
You know, diagnostic assessments, yes, I ask about, you know, your mental health, your state, your sleeping sleeping habits, you're already getting into the physical. But yeah. I mean, I know we've been trained. We ask about sleeping. We ask about eating. We ask about behavioral things. We ask about job and stress and home environment and relationships, in addition to things like checking off the depression checklist. So this kind of concept that, oh, wait, maybe there's something beyond just the physical, I kind of roll my eyes a little bit, mostly just for physicians who don't really think about the psychological side of things, but which is getting better. I will defend my physician friends. It's getting better. But yeah, there's something very easy and tangible about having a checklist. Mm-hmm. You know, if you have these things, then you have this. And that's where I think we are with the search engines right now, is they're just kind of pulling strands of data together, stuff that tends to stick together and producing the most common result. But then when you start adding in dynamic factors, such as, like you mentioned, stress or anxiety or any kind of psychological or cultural or sociological standing, I feel like that's important too. Even something as I guess, generic as race or where in the United States or where in the world you are, definitely.
Oh, no, absolutely.
Would
yeah.
have a huge influence on, you know, what could possibly be going on. So I definitely think with things like the Fitbit and our phone tracking apps and things like health apps, I think people bringing data into the doctor's office, you're going to see it more often. I know yeah. I've done it even before I was pregnant. I had my sleep tracking app because I was having trouble sleeping. And then I had Clue, which is a period tracking app. And I would bring that into my doctor's office and she would take a look at it and kind of make some notes. And obviously not going to base any decision off of, you know, a non-medical grade phone application. But it does, you know, as a clinician, I always appreciated more information. You know, yeah. clients would bring in, you know, the log I gave them. Oh, but I also wrote down this note, or, hey, here's a transcript of whatever happened. Yeah. No one actually ever gave me a transcript. That's just me dreaming. But the idea of incorporating, seeing the patient as an expert in their own right, you know, not an expert physician, but an expert on their own body and their own experience, I think is going to be very helpful in moving medicine forward. And it definitely already has been. I mean, there's patients now have more medical authority than they ever have. And
true.
I know a lot of physicians don't like that, but I personally think it's a good thing for you to have autonomy over your own body.
And, you know, it's not uncommon for a physician to, if you say I'm feeling depressed or I'm feeling anxious, they'll just write you a prescription instead of referring you out.
Yeah.
For me, it was so common, like constantly. Yeah, no, keep coming, but you should probably go check this out. Like, go to this doctor, go to this type of doctor for this, go to that type of doctor for that. Like, check that out. We'll keep working here, but you should definitely, you know, look into this other thing. And when I had my private practice, I felt sometimes I felt like I couldn't do more for clients just because, and I felt like I couldn't refer them to somebody right outside the door to follow up and get more information. You know, I put it all in their hands, and I kind of wish I could do a little bit more than that. And because of the way, you know, I don't know, it felt very isolated, and I always wish I had like this holistic practice where, you know, there were many different fields represented, and, you know, like I worked in a hospital or something, and it was weird because we are so disconnected. And I'm hoping that just everything you just said about, yeah, like imagine right now putting race into the equation with things that are happening in the news, or if you have, you know, temperature fluctuations, because that's a real thing. And how that, you know, what the temperature is in a person's home. So maybe have a Nest hooked up to your record, and then even your bank account, right? Like maybe, like that's a real thing. If somebody's bank account is really, really low, that may be a sign of, you know, maybe lead to additional stress. And you start looking at all of these things together, and yeah, I think you need some sort of really great AI to make sense of all of that. And it's really hard. And it's especially really hard to sit there and, you know, that's why an intake, some places have multiple hour intakes, right? Just to get through all the information. And I've worked in places where sometimes the intake was scheduled for two different days, which is like a whole other thing where it's unfortunate because you have like that's 2 weeks maybe for the person, or a whole week, right, where nothing happens except them answering questions. And I don't know, but that's why this kind of thing is, I'm really hopeful, you know, mm-hmm. that we're like moving in the right direction, and to hear that we are talking about AIs being, you know, getting as close to people in terms of diagnosing things, and once you start putting that together, and then you acknowledge that when you combine it with human beings, accuracy is so high. It makes me really, really excited about how close we are to a better medical, mental health, just health experience, period.
I think a really good way of kind of conceptualizing the future of this is I look at my phone and I see the early stages of a Star Trek tricorder. Something that you can just wave up and down and scan and get the lay of the land, whether it's actual land or, you know, physical space, anatomy, things like that, that you could just, you know, kind of take a quick swipe of somebody and instantly get information about their vitals and their health and, you know, all the stuff. Hopefully less invasive. As someone who's terrified of needles, I'm all about the less invasive stuff. yeah. But it's something that maybe 10 years ago sounded fantastic, and now I don't feel that it is so far away. I totally expect to have somebody who has the equivalent of a tricorder scan me at some point in my life. And I'm totally fine with that.
Yeah, there's an XPRIZE right now. It's called the Tricorder XPRIZE, I'm pretty sure.
And see? It's,
yeah. So, I mean, there's, you know, the people with a lot of money are willing to push that forward because it is, you know, our phone is getting very close to that. And in pieces, I think that what Google and Apple are doing with their health apps are, I think it's great what's happening. And again, I don't think that until we'll start hearing more and more cases of people actually getting help from putting all that information together, but people just aren't used to it. So I think it's great that at least, you know, in our Google search boxes, right up front, it's starting to happen there, which is a place where everybody goes, a lot of people go on a daily basis.
Yeah, I think the next step, the step that we're at right now is very, very psychology-like in that we rely on self-report. We rely on people to put in their symptoms in order to get something out of it. I know some of my favorite apps on my phone, I have to input the information, you know, what I ate or what I drank or, you know, that's like, I think where we're at right now. The next step above are the apps that just gather that information naturally. So you see that with the Fitbit. Mostly movement-based exercise apps can do that, but there's no app that just scans what I eat and automatically puts it in there. And I feel like that is one of the biggest hurdles to getting people to taking better care of their health is the automaticity with which that information is entered. So yeah, I know if I'm putting my calorie count in or if I'm trying to check my sugar because I don't want to get gestational diabetes, you know, that I would have to be very good and very on top of making sure that I'm attending to that, as opposed to if I go for a walk, my phone automatically tracks it. My Fitbit automatically tracks it. So I think that is the next frontier, is no longer relying on human manual input, but somehow being able to sense or figure out what's going on in the world around you which is definitely a lot more challenging, but we are seeing some advances in that area.
Yeah, there's like, you know, you can weigh yourself and it'll automatically send it over Wi-Fi to your account and it'll mark how much you weigh every day. Once we get to that point with things like blood tests, you know, that you can just do at home, a couple drops of blood, reads everything, uploads it, now you're good. You can get, yeah, that's where we need to go. And in mental health, that means brain scans and all sorts of stuff that we just, it's just too expensive for anybody to do.
For right now, but the future,
the future
is so bright, you got to wear shades.
Yeah. Have you watched Equilibrium?
No, I haven't.
Yeah, they have a machine, like all the people who live in space are the rich people. People who live on the ground or poor people.
Oh, Elysium?
Elysium, that's okay. The one I meant.
Equilibrium,
sorry.
Is that some kind of new show? No, but Elysium,
nope.
That's what I want.
One Equilibrium of those, is a whole other movie. Yeah.
One of those pods you just climb into, it body scans you. It's, oh, you
and
have,
fixes you. Yep.
Yep. We had it in Alien 2, but that one wasn't quite as effective.
Yes.
But yes, I have seen Elysium, and that is something that I don't think is, especially for more routine procedures, I mean, maybe if it's mild grade skin cancer, you can just boop, something you'd go to the dermatologist, a wart, boop, just, you know, pop it off.
Yeah.
We already have robotic surgery. So eventually, yeah. I don't think something like that scenario is too far off.
Yeah. And again, once that gets cheaper, we will hopefully avoid that whole Elysium situation.
Yeah. Hopefully the 1% won't live on their own halo ring while the rest of us suffer and get radioactively exposed here on Earth.
We're getting there. All right. So for the doctors who want to yell at us, you can write to us at stfu@psychtechpodcast.com.
Wow.
They're telling us.
Well, I know, but if they want to practice their bedside manner, I'd be more than happy to help you. So free tip, completely free. If you have a patient who is deathly afraid of needles and tells you, "I am deathly afraid of needles and I will pass out," the correct response is not, "Oh, well, you're just going to have to get over it." I'm just saying, that is not a helpful response.
Are you sure?
I'm pretty sure, yeah. So that's my free tip from me to everyone else. Even if that is the truth, it's not going to help. And it's probably just going to make your patient angry and become obstinate and dig her heels in and refuse to get a glucose test that was supposed to be due at week 28 and is now in week 35 and still hasn't done it. So,
I mean, they've got to be teaching them to do that at school because it's just – They all do it, right?
I'm pretty sure it's in the doctor handwriting class.
Yeah, absolutely. We love doctors. Sorry. Love and hate mail. Just find us at psychtechpodcast.com and at psychtechcast on Twitter. That's it. We'll do this again next week.
All right. Be healthy.